if you ever had any doubt about the power of a solid documentary to drive change, then Cry of the Forests would have washed those thoughts well away. The message it delivered was sharp and to the point. That is, you know all those beautiful forests we all love throughout Noongar country? Well, us settlers are still ripping them down, and it's doing greater damage than just removing something beautiful. It's ruining the actual land. That message cut through all the way to our resource-smitten state government. Joining me now is the director of Cry of the Forest, Jane Hammond, on the eve of the release of her new film, Black Cockatoo Crisis. Good morning, Jane. Hello, Jane. Are you there? Oh, we've got it there. Hello, Jane.
Good morning.
Hey, I'm very sorry. One last button to push. Jane, Cry of the Forest was a massive success on so many levels. The awareness it delivered to enough West Australians to affect change, well, it was significant. You must be a very proud director.
Oh, look, I'm proud of the audiences that come and take action. So, yeah, making the film is the tool, but it's getting those bums on seats and getting people to then take that extra step. Something I strongly believe in, it's grassroots action. Given the right information or enough information, people will act and make change.
So governmental change was on your mind when making the film?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these films are social impact documentaries, so they are specifically made to push for change, to see a problem that's happening in mostly for me, it's in the environment, and to show that to people in a clear, concise way, and to introduce and give voice to people who don't usually get a voice, the people on the front line of these battles, and bring people along for the ride in an entertaining but powerful way.
Well, yeah, I mean, if somebody hasn't taken living locally hasn't taken the opportunity to see Cry of the Forest yet, it's not too late. You can still go and see it. But onto the new movie, with so many black cockatoos gracing the suburbs, it must be hard for many to understand the dire future these awesome birds are facing. Why are we seeing so many?
Yeah, well, right now we're not seeing as many. Certainly these birds, especially our carnabies, they used to really rule the skies, and we've had such dramatic decline in numbers. So although you see flocks around, they're nothing like they used to be. In the 50s and 60s, you hear people talking about how these birds blackened the sky. They're incredibly social birds, and they like to hang around in large groups, or at least get together often in large groups. But we were seeing that less and less now.
But I mean, I remember them as a kid more roaming the countryside. The tales they'd carry that a large flock of black cockatoos flying through would be bringing the rain. That doesn't really happen now. Their neighbourhoods in the country have been erased. I mean, I guess this is kind of connected to Cry of the Forest.
Yeah, look, we've done so much clearing. We've cleared nearly 90% of the carnabies' habitat, and we've cleared great swathes of the forest areas as well, the Northern Jarrah Forest, which is home to the forest red-tailed black cockatoo, and the Bowdans, black cockatoo. So we've got, we're attacking these birds on every front.
Well, I mean, wiping out 90% of the area that they live on. I mean, you can imagine how we'd get on if 90% of the houses in Perth were knocked down and we all had to get by.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got some crucial nesting places still existing in the wheat belt, but two of the major ones, it's Julimar State Forest and Kokanar up Timber Reserve near Ravensthorpe, Julimar's near Bindoon, both of those precious nesting areas for the carnabies are being targeted for mining of so-called green technology minerals. The push from the mining industry is that we need batteries, and our forests collateral damage and the species that depend on them. So we've really got to have a rethink about how we handle these sorts of decisions and how we protect what we have left.
So what sort of trees do the black cockatoos look for? What sort of areas do they like hanging out in previously to us removing all their land?
Yeah, look, they like to forage in certain areas. Like the carnabies, for example, they're very migratory. So they spend their summer and autumn on the Swan Coastal Plain, which is basically where Perth is. And their traditional food is the Banksia woodlands. Now, we've lost most of our Banksia woodlands. So these birds have taken to, they've adapted really well to the pine plantations north of Perth. But those pine plantations on which the carnabies now depend will be all gone, every tree, within the next couple of years, because there's a government policy to clear fell the land up there, not to replant it with native vegetation, not to replant it with Banksia woodlands or pines, but to let it go fallow to weeds. And the impact on our carnabies of that last resort, and important feeding grounds and important resting grounds before they go to their breeding grounds in the wheat belt, is being decimated. So not only are we clearing the wheat belt areas and taking the last of those precious, precious hollows from these birds, but we're also destroying their feeding lands.
If I could just rewind a little bit there. We're turning the Nangarra pine plantation into weeds to let it just go fallow. Was there any reasoning given for that one?
Yeah, look, it's just a terrible policy over many decades. These beautiful Banksia woodlands that fed the carnabies were cleared about a century ago to make way for an important softwood industry that was, you know, quite a big industry at one time in Western Australia, and still is. But these pines supported the pine laminate industry for quite some time. Now, in about the 90s, we were having trouble with water in Perth, and the pines, the finger was pointed at the pines for failing to sucking up too much water and not letting the aquifer recharge. And that was having implications across the Nangarra Mound, which, as everyone would know, is a really important drinking water source. Mm. But those statistics and that science has since been called into doubt. And we haven't looked at that issue for, you know, since the 90s, basically. And attempts by Professor Hugh Finn to get this before the EPA, to get the EPA to reassess the decimation of those pines, because they are now so important to an endangered species, have just been stymied. And the EPA has not responded, despite all the legislation that says you've got till this time. They keep stalling. So they may be stalling until... till all the pines are gone, and then they'll say, "Oh, let's look at it." Oops. it is hard to imagine that any government would let this large tract of land just go fallow.
I mean, and we've already lost 20 years' opportunity of replanting it with Banksias.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really in a terrible situation. But what needs to happen, I think, is that we need to put the brakes on any more pine clearing until we start revegetating the Banksias and we start enabling these birds to feed and roost in big trees.
Well, Jane, without ruining the ending, I mean, please don't tell me we're looking at extinction. What's the best case scenario for the various birds we call black cockatoos?
Look, there's so much we can do if we act now. It's a bit like the climate issue. You know, we can keep saying nothing's happening or just, oh, it doesn't matter. Or we could really, you know, pull out all stumps and start planting. You know, individuals can plant cockatoo-friendly trees. Local councils can put in watering stations that are popping up all over the city for these birds, so there's enough water high up and safe. We can be making sure that all these important nesting grounds are preserved and protected so that these birds have a chance. So there's so many things. If we act now, we will save these birds. If we do nothing and we just keep pretending it'll be fine because we're seeing a lot in the sky, and no worries, then we're going to lose these beautiful, beautiful creatures.
Well, Jane, the movie receives its first screening on Wednesday evening. I'll be putting the pressure on friends and family to catch it. Where can we see it? Where do we tell Mark McGowan to take his family for movie night?
Yeah, we're having a screening. The world premiere is on this Wednesday at the Lunar Leaderville. And then that's all sold out. Then we have a backlot screening at the backlot on Saturday night. And then at this stage, we've got a season set for the Lunar. So it'll be playing three times a day, or two times a day and one every night for a week. And then after that, it looks like a second week as well at the Lunar.
Wow.
And then we'll be touring with the film through the regional areas, and we'll be taking it to the East Coast as well.
Well, Jane, thank you so much for chatting with us this morning, and thank you for the important movies that you've been making for all West Australians.
Thanks for your support. It's very much appreciated.
That was Jane Hammond, journalist, environmentalist, activist, film director and all-round West Australian legend, talking to us there about her new movie, Black Cockatoo Crisis. You heard where you can get hold of a viewing of it, Lunar Cinema. Actually, there are screenings at Backlot, she said, next week. Damn it, if you want a really comfortable viewing of a movie, go to Backlot. But we all love Lunar, so get on down there and catch Black Cockatoo Crisis.